back to the bin.
Then you know what I say after that? Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I am Paul Spataro, and he's the other guy.
Hello!
So now, in the grand scheme of things, are you the Thing or are you the Hulk?
There's things I guess I've never really considered before, to be honest with you.
These are the important things in life that just fly by you and you don't think about them, but, you know, you need to know. The audience needs to know. So, I think I am neither, because I'm just kind of a wuss. I'm not as tough as either of them by any stretch of the imagination.
No. I don't know, the Hulk in temperament, I guess, but beyond that...
I have seen you Hulk out. So, if anybody listening hasn't figured it out, when I said it's the other guy, I meant it's Scott Gardner, of course.
Hello!
How you doing?
I'm kind of... I gotta be honest with you, I'm kind of depressed. Why can't I see you? Do you not have your...
Because my camera's not on. That should make you happier, not depressed.
Okay. Well, it's just, I don't know. I feel like we're talking directly to each other when I can see you. So, yeah, I'm kind of, I don't know. I've been thinking about a lot of existential things of late, just because of, you know, recent events and all that. And so I was looking at something today. And I found this. Now, this is dated September 29th, 2017. I have no idea what the source is other than, you know, I put in a Google search and this is what came up. But the average, according to this, it says the average human spends roughly 79 years on Earth. Now, they give other breakdowns by days and everything, but the one I was really interested in was hours. So of those average, you know, roughly 79 years, it breaks down to 692,040 hours in an average lifetime. That's not a lot when you really think about it. I mean, if somebody had asked me how many hours are there in an average lifetime, I'd have guessed it was in the millions.
Especially when you factor in how many hours you waste on crap like the book we're covering today.
Oh, you beat me to my joke, damn it. I was going to say, and you made me spend one of these precious hours on this piece of shit. Yes, you beat me to my joke, but yes.
You know what? We got to give fair warning to our listeners, because I know most of the listeners enjoy our Thing Hulk retrospective. I know most of our listeners enjoy hearing us talk about the books, whether we like them or not. And I think the reason for that is because we're very honest about our opinions on the books. But I think there are some listeners, and I'm not sure exactly who falls into this category, but I do think there are some who say, you know what, if you really didn't like a book, I don't really want to hear what you have to say about it, because I don't like to hear the negative. And you know what, if that's the way you feel, and I'm not looking at anybody in particular again, but if that's the way how somebody who's listening feels, then that's okay. You could skip this episode and go on to the next one, where we'll probably do a book we like. But I have to say, sometimes when we do the books we don't like, those are the ones that I have the most fun just ripping apart.
This is true. So this one, as
I said to Scott before we started doing this, actually what I said to him yesterday, was I'm not sure if we're going to rip the artwork or the story more. And that makes me sad, quite frankly, because I'm a Roy Thomas fan, I'm a Herb Trimpe fan, and they both did this book. So I'm saddened to say that, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'll tell you in advance, I am not going to like this book. But, you know, there maybe there's some positives in there. Maybe. We'll see. I think we should do a synopsis and then maybe just page through it together. Because okay. I think we could point out the points that are really negative. So it's Fantastic Four Unlimited number 4, which was released on October 19th of 1993, and it has a cover date of December of 1993. It's written by Roy Thomas. It's penciled by Herb Trimpe. It's inked by Steve Montano. Now, I'm not familiar with Steve Montano, and he may be one of our chief villains in this piece. And I do have some points where I would point that out, and we'll get to it. The colorists are Avi Handru and Neil Yarmatov. The cover is by Claudio Castellini. And now that I've given you the cast of characters, the only people I know are Roy Thomas and Herb Trimpe. And as I said, I am fans of them, or a fan of them, despite the fact that I do not like this book. The cover by Claudio Castellini shows the Thing and the Hulk both striking a pose as they get ready to land a punch. The Hulk has a very, very weird, I wouldn't say six-pack, it's more like a case. He's got all these little bumps on his, right above his, you know, main abdomen area, and the Thing looks kind of smallish to me. I know the Hulk is supposed to be bigger than him, but it looks a bit exaggerated to me. On the other hand, it is the Thing facing off against the Hulk, which is always good. I don't think this is the best example of it, but, you know, there you are. So the story is called The Main Event, and the Thing and the Hulk are meeting face-to-face for a one-on-one brawl against each other in the middle of a street. However, in the middle of the fight, it suddenly ends. As it turns out, the two are fighting in a virtual reality simulation as part of a charity show. However, the Thing isn't willing to call the fight over, nor is a secret spectator. The Thing tries to take a shot at the Hulk, even with the Invisible Woman and Human Torch trying to pull him back. But the Hulk easily subdues Ben. Ben decides he has had enough and decides to go be by himself for a moment. On his way out of the Colosseum, he bumps into the Ajax, one of Hulk's allies, in the Pantheon, making him spill his popcorn. The simple-minded Ajax gets mad for dropping his snack, while the Thing is upset that the bump knocked the helmet off his face, revealing his scarred face. The two almost come to blows when they are broken up by members of the Pantheon and the Fantastic Four. Meanwhile, at the Pantheon's headquarters, known as the Mount, their teammate Delphi awakens from a nightmare. Back in Las Vegas, the Pantheon meet with the Hulk to discuss what they're going to do next. However, the Hulk has no interest in seeing the sights in Vegas due to his past history in the region as Mr. Fix-It. The rest of the group decide to go out to supper, agreeing to meet with the Hulk in the morning so they can return to the Mount. Later that evening, Delphi wakes up from her nightmare with a vision of the Thing choking Atalanta to death. Is that Atalanta, Georgia? I'm not sure. She sends out a dire warning telepathically to her teammates, prompting the simple-minded Ajax to run off to stop the Thing before he can theoretically harm Atalanta. Delphi tells the others that since her dreams are not always accurate, they should stop him before someone gets hurt. Ajax manages to find the Thing first and ambushes him. As the fight begins to cause a large amount of damage, the Hulk is called in his hotel room and alerted of the problem. The Hulk breaks up the fight as the Pantheon and the Fantastic Four arrive on the scene with the authorities. As they're hashing things out, they all realize that Atalanta is nowhere to be seen, and they go out to try and find her. In the middle of the Nevada desert, Atalanta is taking the sights when suddenly a massive hand rips out of the ground and pulls her down into the ground. As the heroes continue to search for the missing girl, the members of the Pantheon find a letter saying that Atalanta was hitching back to the Mount and will meet them there. Even though it is probably a forgery, the Hulk sends Ajax, Paris, and Hector back to the Mount anyway, while he and the Fantastic Four keep searching the desert. No sooner are the Pantheon gone, does the ground break open, dumping the Hulk and the Fantastic Four into the realm of Subterranea. There, they're ambushed by a massive snake that breathes sleeping gas and knocks them all out. When the Hulk awakens, he finds that the Mole Man has contained the Invisible Woman, Human Torch, and Atalanta. The mole man then shows the aging body of his lover, Kayla. He explains that he has not been able to restore her youth since the subterranean wars and has now rigged up a machine that absorbs the massive energies from when the Hulk and Thing fight to try and restore her. Despite Kayla's warning, protests to let her die, and the prisoner's pleas for the Thing and Hulk not to follow the mole man's wishes, the Thing is convinced to fight when his old foe begins torturing his captives. At first, it looks as though the Thing and the Hulk are just following the mole man's wishes, even as he begins to torture their friends. But in reality, the two are working together, pounding on each other to get close enough to Mole Man and smash his control rod. With its destruction, all the gathered energies are released, ruining the Mole Man's plans. Angered by this affront, he summons his Megator to destroy them. As the Hulk holds the creature at bay, the Thing frees Sue, Johnny, and Atalanta. With the Megator defeated, Kayla frees herself from his rejuvenation and tells him that she accepts her old age, even as the device goes through one final malfunction. Realizing that she loves him for who he is, the Mole Man agrees to stop his insane scheme and asks Kayla to marry him. Kayla accepts, and with the danger over, the heroes return to the surface where the Thing continues to press his luck by insisting that he can take the Hulk in a fight. Now that was a mouthful, and this is...
That's what she said.
There's just so much wrong with this issue.
But before we dive into this, I just want to echo what you said about both of the two primary creators on this, the two big name creators on this, Roy Thomas and Herb Trimpe. I've always had the utmost respect for Roy Thomas, mostly because of his work with Earth 2 over at DC, but you know, with other projects as well. Yes, he can be wordy. Yes, he can be corny, that sort of thing. But you know, I really do have a lot of respect for the guy, and consider myself a fan. Herb Trimpe, I became a fan over time. I came to really respect him, and there are certain things he's done over the years that I look back on with great fondness. You know, some of the Star Wars stuff that he did, some of the early G.I. Joe, some of the Hulk stuff he did way back in the day. I've become a fan over time. I really wasn't as a kid. But I would consider myself a fan of his now. I mean, he's not one of my top favorites, but I generally like the guy's stuff. So I just wanted to say that before we really get into this, because I feel like we're going to really tear up this book. So I wanted to preface that with, you know, this isn't coming from a place of hate or pre-disdain or anything like that. It's, you know, I mean, I really do like these guys. I just want to know what the hell went wrong here, because this is awful.
Well,
it's just top to bottom awful.
I'm going to echo exactly what you said about Roy Thomas, and I'm a fan of a lot of his, you know, his epic things that he did, like, you know, his run on the X-Men with Neil Adams, his, you know, the Kree-Skrull War, right. You know, All-Star Squadron, you know, the Invaders. There's just so much stuff that Roy Thomas did that I love. He created The Vision. I mean, he did so many things that I really enjoy. And yes, you're right, he could be wordy. He was wordy in a lot of his books. But I always kind of found it to be okay. Like, you know, it wasn't... There are certain writers who are wordy and you're like, oh my God, I just can't take this. Sometimes, you know, and I'm sure some fans of his will disagree with me on this, but sometimes I think Brian Michael Bendis was that guy. You know, just going on and on for the sake of going on instead of actually for a purpose. I kind of always felt that Roy Thomas's prose had a purpose. I was listening to an interview of his recently, and he was talking about like adapting Conan for comics, and then he was talking about adapting some, you know, like classic books for like classic, you know, Marvel Classics Illustrated, and talking about like what a difference it is to try and take, you know, a prose novel from, you know, the 1800s, and then make it presentable in the late 90s or early 2000s when this interview was done, and saying, you know, it's such a different thing. And I think to some extent that's true with some of Roy's work when he, you know, when he did get a little verbose, that, you know, he was trying to paint a picture. He was trying, there was a purpose to his lengthy dialogue boxes and, you know, narration boxes, and I usually felt it was fine. I didn't think there was anything about the overall storytelling in this issue that was a problem, but it was the actual story that I had a problem. It's not the way they tell it. It's the story itself that I had a problem with. And the artwork, we'll get into it as we go through the book, but I wonder if this really is Herb Trimpe's fault, or if this book has a case of 90s-itis. Even, you know,
definitely.
Is that the reason why the artwork is the way it is, you know, as opposed to Herb Trimpe failing? I look at some of the layouts on some of the pages, and I think the layout is fine. It's the final rendering that I have a problem with, and I'm wondering, as we often do, if it isn't the inking. And I'm suspecting that at this point in Herb's career, you know, he was getting a little up there in years, and maybe he wasn't putting in the detail that you could put in, so he was relying on the inker to do that. And if you don't team him with the right inker at that point, you're not going to get a good product. So maybe I'm just making excuses for him, but I'm making excuses for him.
You wouldn't happen to have a copy of Fantastic Four Annual number 26 handy, would you?
I can punch one open on the DVD. Hang on.
The reason I asked...
Yeah, why don't you go into that while I look for it?
I had just read this not long ago as part of my Fantastic Four read-through that I was doing, you know, that was inspired by this Thing Hulk retrospective that we're doing. And looking at Trimpe's timeline, that was only, I think, two projects before. Let's see, I had Mike's Amazing World.
Is it Annual 26?
Yeah, 20. Yes, it was two projects prior to this book that we're looking at. I had read that recently and was just mortified by the art. There's two stories in it. The first one is Trimpe inked by Bud LaRosa. I think that's Sam LaRosa, isn't it? I think. Or are they two different people? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but this, I'm looking at it now, and it looks like it also has a very bad case of 90s-itis.
Yeah, and horrible. I mean,
you know what it looks like? It looks like you're trying to do Rob Liefeld.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. And when I initially read that, and suffered through it, quite honestly, I chalked a lot of it up to the inker. And I think some of that, yes, you can, you know, put that blame, some of that blame on the inker. But looking at these, honestly, I, you know, pulled up side by side here, while LaRosa's inks are much better, I think he's much more complimentary to Trimpe, and I think just honestly just fleshes the art out a lot better and smooths some things out, that sort of thing. It still has the same basic flaws that I'm seeing with the art in this book that we'll look at, FF Unlimited number 4, with pinched faces, horrible anatomy, just squash and stretch, just all these weird, bizarre, and grotesque images all through this entire book. So I hate to say it, while I don't think that, what's this inker's name again? I'm not seeing it in the credits page here.
Steve Montano.
Steve Montano, while I don't think he's doing Herb Trimpe any favors, I also don't think he's entirely the problem.
Well, here's what I'm thinking now that you've pointed this one out to me, and I'm paging through this a bit, and I'm seeing the Rob Liefeld quality of it, and I'm not a huge Liefeld fan, as I think anybody who's listened knows. But I think, you know, he was one of the flavors of the day in the early 1990s.
Oh, yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if either Herb took it on himself to say, okay, I'm going to try and do this in a Liefeld-like way. And I'm talking right now about the annual, not the unlimited. Or if somebody in editorial said, oh, could you do something more like this? And showed him some Liefeld art. Now, the unlimited, I'm not sure who's... art I'm looking at it being similar to. It's not, it doesn't have the Liefeld-esque look to it, but I do think it's got the very 90s look to it. And just, oh, as an aside, on the second story in the annual, that art looks like he was trying to do it like, who's the artist that did Spider-Man 2099?
Leonardi?
Yeah, I think that's right, Rick Leonardi. The second story looks to me like he's trying to do Leonardi
in the
annual.
Is that Trimpy again in that?
In the annual? Yeah, I think they're both him. In
oh,
fact,
wow, because that actually looks pretty damn good. Now,
oh, no, it's not. No, it is not. I apologize. It's Brian Pelletier.
Pelletier? Oh.
They're both inked by Bud LaRosa.
Right. I wonder if that guy's related to Paul Pelletier. But anyway, that's kind
of so that second story, you can just wipe out everything I said about it because that's meaningless. But the first one, I definitely see the Liefeld-esque appearance, and I could be wrong, but I would be surprised if I was that he wasn't trying to get a Liefeld look on that one. Now going to Unlimited, I'm trying to see who it is that was a 90s flavor of the day that he was trying to do. Maybe what's his name? Eric
Larson?
Larson.
That's very possible.
Another flavor of the day.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but am I remembering this properly, that back in the day Trimpy was one of those guys that would often get tasked by, I guess, by Stan as an imitative style artist? Like, if he wanted somebody to draw in, like, do Kirby, do so-and-so, do Ditko, whatever, Trimpy was one of those guys? Am I wrong about that?
I've never heard of anything where they spoke that way of him, because, you know, Rich Buckler was clearly that. He'd tell him what style to ape, and Rich was great at it, actually.
Right.
I've never heard that Trimpy was tasked to do that, but if I look at his artwork over the years, I do see times when it looked like he was trying to get a particular style that would be, you know, not his own. And it makes sense to me that either he was tasked to do it or he decided on his own, hey, this is popular, let me do this.
Right. See, now, please feel free to disagree with me, but I think, as the annual goes, if he truly is trying to imitate Liefeld and the nine, you know, the image guys, basically he's trying to do an image riff, I think it's passable, maybe barely passable, but I think it's passable in a way that whatever the hell he's doing in this Unlimited is not passable. The art in this Unlimited one is so friggin' bad to me that I honestly, there were whole, not just panels, not just pages, there were entire swaths of this book where I'm like, how the hell did this get past Marvel, you know, quality control? How did this book get published? And I'm talking art wise not that the story's, you know, great either, but I'm talking purely art wise I was appalled by the quality or lack thereof of the art in the FF Unlimited number 4. I think it's some of the worst published art by one of the big two publishers that I've actually ever seen. And that's, I mean, I know that's really saying something, but I feel that strongly about it. It is horrible. I mean, do you agree?
I agree that it's horrible. I don't know if it's the worst I've ever seen. You know, it's bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm hard pressed to defend it. My best defense is I could say some of the layouts, not the renditions, look like they wouldn't be bad if they were better rendered.
Oh, well, I mean, I always thought that of Trimpy. I always thought he was, you know, he's in a long line of guys that I think were excellent layout guys. You know, like they knew how to set a scene, they knew how to lay out a page, that sort of thing. It was often the finished result where, you know, your mileage may vary whether you liked it, whether you didn't like it. But I never had a problem. Even with as shitty as this looks, I still like the way, generally speaking, things are staged, you know, that sort of thing. It's the final art. It's just, I'm at a lack of words to describe what's wrong, and it's not any one thing. It's a multitude of things. It is characters changing size, characters changing their ratio to one another, size-wise and perspective-wise. It's wonky anatomy. It's squash and stretch. It's a lot of the times they look like their muscle. You remember like at the height of the popularity of the Incredible Hulk TV show with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno, you could buy muscles that you could inflate like under your clothes. And I think it might even come with a tearaway shirt. I can't remember, but I think I don't know if it came with it, but I remember the commercial for it had the little kid like inflate the muscles, and then his shirt would start to rip just like the Hulks would do on the show. Do you remember this? Do you know what I'm talking
Vaguely.
About?
Vaguely. I have a vague recollection of it, but it's, you know, I, being a few years older than you, not that many really, but a few, you might have fallen in the age group for it, whereas I might have just aged out of it at that point.
Right.
So I may not have seen what you did for exactly that reason.
But there are several sequences in this book where the heroes, I'm looking specifically, I'm not sure what page it is of the scan, but this is one of the, I'm looking at one of the rare pages that actually has a number at the bottom. It's page 19. It's page 12 of the scan, page 19 of the story. I'm not sure how that works. I miss it. Oh, it's because some of them are double page spreads. There's a shot of Sue Richards and her brother behind her, and she's going, "Come on, Johnny, this could get serious fast." And he's right behind her saying, "Right behind you, sis. Look at his legs." He looks like his legs are two balloons about to pop. They are so, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's actually grotesque how deformed they are in some of these instances.
And that is something that's been, you know, I think a lot of critics have put on Liefeld. So, you know, there could be... This could have been a stage where Trimpy was trying to ape Liefeld, and maybe just a different inker gave a different spin on it. And clearly, trying to ape Liefeld was a mistake. Certainly for Trimpy it was. Now, I'm making it sound like, you know, like I absolutely hate Liefeld's work. I don't hate it, but there's a lot of things about it that I'm not a fan of. And anatomy is probably the biggest thing that I'm not a fan of in Liefeld's work. And he's famous for not drawing feet well. And what's interesting is if you go to the page before the one that you pointed to with Sue and Johnny running, look at the announcer's feet. Like, you wouldn't even be able to balance him on those. They're so tiny.
Yeah.
So, you know, so maybe there is a little something to my Liefeld thought on this thing. But look at that same shot. Look at the differential in size between the Hulk and the Thing. It makes no sense to me. The Thing is not small. Yes, he's not as big as the Hulk, but he's not tiny. Like he's being drawn like he's half the size.
You flip back a page, the page where the Hulk is holding, I guess it's a piece of, the thing is attacking him with a light post, and the Hulk apparently grabs the post, and it's bending into like a U shape.
Mm-hmm.
That shot right there, the third panel in, the thing is like child size compared to the Hulk.
And the thing is closer to the reader than the Hulk, so if perspective would give you any kind of exaggeration, it would right. be that the thing is bigger than he is, not the other right. way around. So, yeah, I mean, the perspective on this is not good, and that's got to fall at the feet of Trimpy. So let's try and page through this. You know, we won't spend too much time on each page, but start from the first page of art. So, you know, you have like kind of a splash page where it has the title and all of that. But the first page of the art, look at the thing's face.
That is
derpy face. To the ridiculous level. Look at his fingers. They're all like squared off and stuff. That's not the way I've ever seen the thing looking. His chip, you know, his stone chips all look different. They're not as big. They're tiny. They don't look good. Then you go right to the next page. He says, I'm going to take the derp face I gave you on the first page, and I'm going to make it even worse on the second.
What are up with his eyes? I noticed this in several instances throughout the entire book, that something weird is going on with the thing's eyes, especially on page, what is this? It's page 7 of the scan, after the Hulk smashes him with a car. His eyes almost look like a some sort of electrical graph or something, like a...
I think his eyes are supposed to be tearing, and then there's shots where it looks like he's trying to draw him with like eyelids that are not quite all the way open.
Right. That's how I took it too. Like it was some sort of weird eyelid thing or something.
But I've never seen the thing drawn with eyelids though.
Yeah. It's just.
Although I guess when we've seen him unconscious, which I know we've seen in certain books. You know, I guess they show him with his eyes closed, so I guess he does have some sort of eyelids, but I've never seen him with them kind of like halfway like that. Keeping paging through here a little bit, when they show him, you know, he accidentally gets the mask knocked off of him, and his face, you know, we're trying to show that he's really deformed from the, you know, what went on with Wolverine in that issue, and it just looks like he's got Christmas tinsel on half his face, or that it's cigar ash, one or the other.
I thought it looked like circuitry, like he's a robot.
What was his name? The guy in the New Mutants.
Oh, right. Warlock.
Yeah, a little bit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look at page.
That doesn't look deformed, and if you can't give him a horrific look, then don't show his face. If he's supposed to have a horrific look, and this dude Ajax, you know what the hell is up with him?
I wondered, what's your opinion of those Pantheon guys? Because I'm just now edging into that period of the Hulk where he joins them, and I guess he must become their leader, according to what's said in this story here. See, I never liked those guys, and I'm a little less enthused going into that period of the Hulk when he was part of them, because I just don't like... I think it's Johnny. Somebody in this story calls them losers, and the Hulk gets all kind of offended by it. But I think that was the right call, because I have considered them losers. They're just weird. I don't know. I just don't care for them myself. What's your opinion of
them? I have like no exposure to them at all. I mean, I've seen pictures, but I don't think I've ever. I think this is the first time I ever read a story where they're in it, unless I've read something that I've forgotten. And, Losers seems to be a pretty apt title.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not seeing that, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, we've talked about that, you know, if you're a good writer, you can write any characters. But I, as a writer, I certainly would not be enthused about being given this crew to write about.
Right. My impression is that they were a Peter David creation for this title, but I don't really think, I could be wrong, but I don't really think they went beyond that. Maybe they all got killed off or something. I really don't know anything about them other than, you know, they were this, you know, this era of the Hulk. So I don't know.
Anybody who's listening, who's a big fan of the Pantheon or a Pantheon hater, let us know. Let us know your opinion if you have more that you know more detailed opinion than we do. I don't need the shot of the Hulk walking off with a towel wrapped around his waist. It's like a beefcake shot for no reason. Then we got the Roman Colosseum, which looks especially unimpressive in this shot. You know, I guess it's supposed to be like a really, really fancy arena, and it does nothing for me.
There was, on the page before that, when, all right, has the girl, whoever the hell this is, she reminded me of Dream Girl from the Legion of Superheroes. I don't know who she's supposed to be, Delphi, I guess. But after she has her little dream sequence there, third panel of that page, that's page 16 of the scan, they're in the locker room. You've got the Pantheon guys are talking to the Hulk. The Hulk's head's way too tiny for his body, and he's got a towel wrapped around his neck. The caption box says, "In the city that never sleeps." And I'm like, I thought this was supposed to be Vegas.
It is supposed to be Vegas.
The city that never sleeps is New York.
Yep.
So, yeah.
That's bad on Roy. Yeah, the Hulk with the little mini head. He's like the anti-MODOK.
Yeah. He looks like that stupid Ajax guy. He's got the same problem, but I think he's supposed to look like that. I don't know.
Well,
why.
Ajax is. I think Ajax is supposed to be a normal sized guy inside this giant armor. So it makes sense that his head would be looking too small for the body.
Yeah, I don't know. I always thought he was supposed to be what was that guy from X Factor? Big guy or
strong
whatever
guy.
The hell his name?
Strong guy. Guido.
Yeah, where he had like a little tiny command module head, but like this ridiculously homunculus body. It was weird.
Yeah, that definitely was. And just sticking on that page, the bottom panel, whoever it is that is, Atalanta and some other Hector. That looks terrible. I don't even know these characters, and they look terrible. then the dream sequence. Look at that thing's face in the dream sequence. What's up with that?
Well, look at what was her name again? Delphi. She has camel toe all the way up to her rib cage. What the hell is that?
I think Herb needed to get a little booster on his musculature.
Yeah, seriously. Because
every one of these girls is wearing like dental floss, thong type things, and it's not drawn in a sexy, attractive way. Now
I don't think if you actually had a human being in the real world that had that exact shape to their body, I don't think her ankles could support the weight of her body.
Look how big her thighs are.
Her thighs are wider than her torso, yet her ankles are the thinnest part of her entire body. She just looks freakish.
Yeah. And I suspect, you know, I mean, she's in terror or whatever, but I still think every shot you see of her because of her out and put in all, you're supposed to think she's sexy, and I don't see that. I don't see it coming to fruition.
No, she looks bizarre.
Now the shot on, I guess it's page 18 in the scan, at the top right of the thing's, like it's like a close up of the thing's face. There, I think the scarring looks pretty good. I could do with a little better color job than the, whatever it is, magenta. But there, you know, it looks scarred in that shot. That one, I'll give that one a slight check mark because I'm looking for things to say nice things about it. then we got kind of a black and white shot on the next page, which I don't get. And look at now we're up to page 20 in the scan. Whoever this dude is with the little mustache, what's going on with his face shape? His
I noticed that.
Like his ears are like 2 inches wider than his jaw. I mean,
yeah, he does a lot of this like pinched face, like pinched jaw thing, especially with the girls, especially with the female characters. But well, the Hulk has it too. On the very next page, the next to last panel, where he says, "Now I'm only going to say this once." Look at his face; he's got the same thing going on, that pinched jaw.
Yeah, yeah. The two shots above that are not bad. When he rips open the elevator and when he jumps down the elevator shaft, those two shots don't look bad.
No, those are not bad.
Then let's see. We continue with him confronting Ajax and the Thing.
That shot of Sue Storm on page 24 is, oh my god, that is horrible.
Is that Malice?
I mean, this is during the time where she's possessed by Malice. I mean, but still.
She's also got the pinched bottom of the face. She's got the tiny
really
little
bad
jaw.
On the next page, yeah, page 25, where she's saying, you've got Johnny and her in the same panel, and she's saying, "Say, where is this Atalanta anyway? Look at her jaw. She looks like
she's got a triangle head."
Yeah, she looks like an alien or something. She's just really freakish looking. You know what I noticed, though, is that Trimpy does not draw her with the four cut out. Because that outfit she's wearing during this time, that four was actually...
that was a boob window.
Yeah, it was a total boob window. Yeah, and he does not draw, or at least it's not colored that way. That's interesting. I don't think it's particularly good in the coloring anyway. I don't think... It doesn't give me the appearance of of a lot of thought being put into the coloring. There's not a lot of it to vary colors or vary shading or anything like that. It's this just really looks like a quick slap, like let's just slap something together and get it out there type of thing.
Well, I don't know that there isn't an element of that went on here. It seems like they were trying to put out like a lot of content at this point with the unlimited series and the annuals and the regular ones. And then you'd have books like, those ones that were like the FF Unplugged and the Avengers Unplugged. I don't know how the timeline is with all of those, but they just seemed in this era to be wanting to put out a ton of content. And I wouldn't be surprised if that made them go, put more emphasis on speed and less emphasis on the quality of what they were putting out. And that's, that is the biggest criticism of the 90s. It's not that there wasn't good stuff that came out in the 90s, but it got buried underneath an avalanche of quantity. So you had to search to find the good stuff. And this books like this got in the way.
Right, right.
Now look, what is it, page 26 of the scan, down at the bottom of the page, the Hulk's face, what's up with that?
Page 20.
His lips, his oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, he's got like a lazy eye, and yeah.
Also, this serpent that got sent down, not a lot of creativity put into design work there.
No.
So then they end up in Mole Man's lair, and as soon as the ground started crumbling underneath them, it was like, okay, it's going to be Mole Man. it didn't feel like there was any surprise here. And this whole premise of has to have them fight each other so that he can steal the energy and de-age her. It's like, Roy, you're better than this.
Well, look, according to, I want to say it was the Marvel Wiki. I don't have it pulled up at the moment, but I took a look at it earlier today. I think I'm pretty sure it was the Marvel Wiki. See if I can find it real quick. It was saying that ultimately this whole thing, this whole story, this whole battle, everything was completely pointless in the long run anyway, because even though what's her name?
Kayla.
Old man's girl, yeah. Even though she does agree to marry him and everything, she never appears again after this.
this felt like throwaway story, though. There's no surprise there.
Now, this is a fandom wiki, so I'm assuming that means it's not produced or necessarily endorsed by Marvel. Is that right?
I don't know. I'm not sure if Marvel has anything to do with it or not.
I'm not sure how that works when it comes to the fandom wikis, but I did find this very funny that under the notes section, one of them actually says... referring to the art, says it's a very horrible rendition.
Oh, that's accurate.
But very, very amusing when it's, you know, because normally these things are supposed to be completely objective, you know, and they rarely ever mention the art or the quality of the art or anything, but I found that very funny that it actually does make a you know, an editorial comment on the art in the issue.
On the page when the Mole Man is revealed, down at the bottom of it on the right, the shot of the Hulk, it looks like that is somebody's face. I can't tell who. I'm looking at it, I'm saying, is that like Chris Christopherson? Whose face is that?
Yeah, it does look like it's supposed to be somebody, but I'm not sure who.
Again, Clint Eastwood? Maybe.
Yeah, I'm really not sure who that's supposed to be. Kind of looks like Clint Eastwood or Lee Majors or, yeah, I don't know, some tough guy.
So then they start fighting and fight, scratch, you know, it's like itchy and scratchy.
Look at the Hulk's teeth. On page 33 of this, it's page 40 of the actual story, but it's 33 of the scan. It's his teeth all look like eggs out of Alien or something. It's what the hell is ugh.
Yeah, that's...
See, I was taking notes up to a point, and I think this is about the point where I just stopped taking any notes anymore because. I could have spent the rest of my life making notes and comments on, you know, and most of my notes didn't even have anything to do with the art. It was just goofy things that were being said in the story and just things that made no sense. There was a comment by the Thing way back toward the beginning of the story where he said he's talking to the Hulk and he said something to the effect of, "You and I have locked keisters many times in the past." I'm thinking, locked keisters? Unless I've got a wrong perception of that word all these years, keister means your ass, right?
Yeah.
Is he saying they locked asses? I'm like, wait, what?
I guess Roy is trying to use that as kind of a way of saying they fought so often. But yeah, I've never heard anybody ever use that term. So I don't get that.
One of the Pantheon guys said something about, "I need you to cool your rockets" or something, and I'm thinking the expression is "cool your jets," Roy. It's "cool your jets," not "cool your rockets." You know, just weird stuff, you know, bizarre stuff like that.
And at this point, you know, as much as I want to say, well, maybe Roy wasn't with it at this point. We're talking 1993. Roy was in his early 50s at this point.
Right.
So, you know, life shouldn't have passed him by yet, or at least I would hope that in your early 50s, since I am now in my early 60s, I would hope that, life, you know, you don't just automatically think if at 50s you're done. I'm up to actually page 35 of the scan. There's a shot where the Thing is, like, hitting the Hulk with two upwards blows. If they were both standing straight up, I'm not sure he would be taller than the Hulk's waist in that shot. Plus, the thing looks like he's wearing a bikini bottom in it, which is just... ugh. You know,
Well, look at the next page after that. Look at Sue, where she's screaming as she's being tortured. Look at that face.
Yeah, no.
She looks like a female predator with that face. It's horrible.
Yeah, the thing takes a stalactite and makes it into a baseball bat just after that. The physics of that particular shot do not make sense. There's no way that little thin handle that he created is going to swing that giant thing at the top.
Right.
Then when the Hulk is about to jump into the water, look at his face. There's like no detail. That's but I do find the shot after that amusing when the Hulk's the thing's hand comes up and punches him in the face. It's just, to me, that's just a funny shot.
It is, but it belongs in like what the, or not Brand Eck or something. It's that kind of art, you know. It's comedic. I don't know if it's intentionally comedic, but it's comedic.
Well, but to me, it's one of the saving graces of it, because there's so much wrong that at least something that makes me smile. You know, sometimes you talk about a movie that's so bad it's good. That shot might fit that. You know, not this whole book, but that shot might have that. On page 45, you put a little tiny mustache on the Hulk, and he's Hitler. Do you see the shot I'm talking about? Top of the page, far right.
Are you talking scan page or?
Yeah, scan page 45.
All right, hang on. I'm flipping to it here. 45 for me is the one where the creature's coming up out of the ground and sending them tumbling.
Okay, then it would be 47, I guess.
47. Yes, yeah, it does. It looks like Green Hitler, like on one of his,
like when he's giving one of his speeches.
Yeah, one of his speeches to, yeah.
Now the shot on the next page, which is a splash page of them all attacking Mole Man's monster, that's not bad.
That's specifically the page that that comment was referring to.
Talk about how bad it was?
Yeah, it says, Ben mentions that the scene of the group fighting the Megator seems familiar. Herb Trimpe was attempting to draw homage to the cover of Fantastic Four number one. It's a very horrible rendition. Incidentally, that story is the first time the Fantastic Four fought the Mole Man. Yeah, because the things that the people in the panel are saying are reminiscent, or sometimes lifted, I think, almost word for word, from the cover of FF number one. So I get what he was going for, but yeah, I got to agree with the comment on the wiki that it's pretty bad.
If it's an effort to make that cover, then I got to agree that, you know, if Trimpe was trying to ape that cover, then he did a poor job of it. But just as a battle scene in general, because it may be that Roy saw the shot and just decided to make it an homage to the cover, I don't think it's bad as far as just a battle scene in general. I think it's kind of, it has a kinetic feel to it to me. The monster itself is nothing to brag about, but just
I think
the rest of it I'm okay with.
I think this Megator, I think if you just simply got him a pedicure and a manicure, he'd probably just chill out completely. That's his biggest problem. Look at those toenails.
So what else have we got here? Oh my god. Look at, I guess it's the second to last page. On the left side, the Mole Man looks like he's something out of an underground comic. That's awful.
Were you saying, Kayla, I can't shut the machine off? Is that the one?
That's the one.
Yeah.
He's also about 6 inches tall.
Yeah. He's getting shorter as the story goes on.
So, and then the story ends.
Thank God.
So, I mean, the problem is I can deal with bad art with a good story. I can deal with a bad story with good art. But a bad story with bad art makes you say, you know, your little anecdote at the beginning, where it's like, not only am I never going to get the hour back that I read this, but I'm also never going to get the hour back that we discussed it. and I'm sorry, dear listeners, but you're also not going to get the hour back where you listened to us discussing it. But, it, wow. You know, it's just, it's kind of sad, honestly, that this was the quality of book that they were willing to put out in this era.
Yeah, that's the biggest, my biggest takeaway in this is looking at this and just going, how did they even have quality control at this point? Because I don't see how you can publish this as Marvel Comics. I just don't see how that goes through any sort of review process and somebody signed off on this. Somebody said, yep, let's go ahead and put that on the stands. Because it's awful. It's absolutely awful. And it really has no redeeming qualities other than the cover's not bad. But even the cover, I mean, on a quick glance, like when you first pull this image up or take it, at first you're like, oh, that's really cool. But the longer you linger over it, it's really not that great. And it has some pretty wonky anatomy and stuff to it as well. So it's not great. But, I mean, the cover is the least offensive thing about it. But let me see. This book was $3.95.
Yeah.
Can you imagine back in the day? I mean, what was the average comic going for at this time? Probably, what, a buck and a quarter, something like that? Paying $4 for this? And then getting home and going, oh my God, this is horrible.
Yeah, it's the effort for them to put out quantity instead of quality is really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
You know, some... This should have been a tryout book that somebody did, and then the editor should have said, yeah, I'm sticking this in a drawer somewhere because you really got to get a lot better before I'm going to publish any of your stuff.
Well, I was looking at the other issues beyond this, and Trimpy's the artist on those, too, and it doesn't get better. I mean, it's bad. All right, so let's see. This came out December 93, so FF at this time was $1.25. I was right. So, yeah, this is, how many times is that? It's at least three times the price, and it's horrible. And, you know, this isn't even in a vacuum, because as I recall, the other books similar to this, like Avengers Unplugged, and what was the other? There was another one that was like that as well. There was Avengers Unplugged. There was.
Well, they had an FF Unplugged also.
Yeah.
But Avengers Unplugged and FF Unplugged, but those were $1. Those were 99 cents actually.
Oh, okay.
You know, if you're gonna rush to put out some content and you're not gonna have as much quality control, at least don't, you know, put a price on it that's ridiculous like that.
And it lasted a dozen issues, and I'm just wondering who was buying it. Was somebody actually buying this book?
Unfortunately, yeah, I was.
Wow, at $4 a whack, that's damn.
Yeah, I'm taking a look at some of the subsequent ones, and you're right. They're just, there's not a lot of improvement in them. And I don't actually have any memory of actually reading these back then. So I might have been buying them and putting them in the stack to read and never getting to them.
See, and I think during that time, I think that's one of those things that the comic companies almost depended on us to do. was that they knew when it came to certain characters and things that there were people that were doing that, especially with like the really hot characters, the really hot X-Men or Batman or something, that they knew damn well that there was, you know, that it was okay to risk putting, you know, something out there that might be really low quality or outright just shit. Because there was enough of a percentage of people that were just buying everything with that team, with that character, whatever, and not even bothering to read it because of, you know, being completists or being speculators or whatever.
Or being just too busy to read it because I was getting ready to get married.
Because there was a glut, you know, there was a glut of this stuff coming out. I think that's why... there are so many cheap bins now, you know, all over the country that are full of crap like this because, you know, people were buying it and not reading it. And then when they finally did crack them open and realize they're garbage, then they wind up in the cheap bins or whatever. I don't know. That's my speculation anyway, but
you know, yeah,
it's horrible.
As we're talking, I'm just going through the different issues of the series and I'm, you know, started to page through them a little bit, and I'm saying, okay, yeah, this one's awful, this one's awful, this one's awful. And then I got to issue 10, and I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, this one doesn't look so bad in comparison. And actually, 11-2 doesn't look all that bad. And interestingly, both of these, or no, actually, wait a minute. Let me see 10 again. It's got Roy Thomas writer, Herb Trimpe artist, John Costanza letterer, John Andriani colorist, Neil Yamatov editor, Mark Grunewald editorial director. No inker. So on at least this one, it's Herb Trimpe, I assume, inking himself. And it's a one with the Eternals, and it doesn't look that bad. At least certainly in comparison to those other ones, it looks much better.
It does, but I don't think I buy it that it's just Trimpe by himself.
You may be right. There may be somebody who's helping him out who's not getting credited. Maybe he had a studio going where he had somebody helping him there. I don't know. But the artwork in that issue is far better than what we got in the other ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm flipping past it right now myself. Yeah, it's definitely an improvement. Definitely an improvement.
And that's with having looked at, you know, just at least quickly at a glance. Maybe if I look more closely, I might think differently. But at a glance, looking at each one of them. Anyway, let's go back to Fantastic Four Unlimited 4 for the final time in our lives. I'm going to say I will give the cover a C-. It's not terrible, but it's not good either. And again, like you said, the more you look at it, the more you start to see the flaws in it. The interior art, which we ragged on this entire time, the one thing it has going for it is the storytelling is okay. I can follow what's going on. There's never a point where I don't know what's going on, even though I look at individual shots and I shake my head. So I'm not going to give it an F. But I'm going to give it a D minus. It's as bad as you can get and still be comprehensible. And there were a couple of shots that I thought were okay, which I pointed out. The story is, it's almost like they said, Roy, can you write a story that has nothing to do with continuity? It's not going to have anything to, you know, nobody's going to care about it. People, you know, we hope is that people will spend the $3.95. If they read it, we hope they forget about it quickly. So, and I think that was his goal here, because I think that's the type of story he wrote. So overall, I am going to give the book an F, though, because it's just a waste of time. Oh, did I give Roy a grade? I'm going to give him a D- also. And the sum of the parts is less than the grades that they got. The book is an F.
Like I say, on a quick glance, the cover looks pretty awesome. It's when you linger over it that you realize, I don't know, it has some real problems. The Thing actually looks pretty good. I don't really find fault with The Thing. But the Hulk just looks weird. He's got this weird ripply thing all through, like, his midsection that makes him look like he's got a rash or something. I'm not sure what that's supposed to be. And his arms are so weird and freakish and huge, and it's like, I don't know how he wipes his own behind. So it's just kind of bizarre. But I do like how the thing looks, and I like how he's shaded and colored, you know, how the light's hitting him and all that. So I don't know. It's kind of a weird one. So I think I'll say a C+ on the cover. That is the kindest thing I'm going to say about this entire issue. Normally, you're absolutely right. Going by my personal grade scale and the way that I judge these things, I reserve an F for when the art is unintelligible and I can't follow it at all. I can follow this. It's just horridly, horridly unappealing to me. So I am going to contradict myself. I am giving the art an F because it's just top to bottom terrible. And I'm stunned that this made it past quality control. And it's not just the art either. It's weird things in the story. Like on page 8 of the scan, you've got this thing where the Hulk smashes a car and then kicks the pieces at the thing. The thing, I guess, dodges it by either burrowing into the ground or falling into a hole. But the hole in the third panel is all jagged and busted, like it was smashed open. But then in the very next panel, the hole is now perfectly circular round, and the thing is coming up out of it with a manhole cover on his head. So it's, I'm assuming, the exact same hole, but two completely different shapes from panel to panel. It's stuff like that that made me nuts in this, and it's why I just eventually had to just stop taking notes, because it's like every single panel had an issue with it. It's just, it's so, so bad. So yeah, an F on the R. It's just, it's horrible. It's like he just completely forgot how the human form actually looks, and so much of the anatomy is just so bizarre and freakish. And I mean, even if he was trying to ape the whole, you know, Rob Liefeld image look thing and all, it just fails spectacularly at that. And then the story, I don't know that the story is necessarily bad. My biggest problem with the story is it's just freaking boring. I was just bored to tears by this story, and I like Roy Thomas, and I like most of these characters. I don't like these Pantheon guys. I don't really know them, but I wasn't impressed by any of them. And then finding out that the whole reason that this story is even happening is ultimately pointless because Kayla just disappears from the narrative after this. It just makes the entire thing completely pointless, honestly. So, yeah, I agree with you. The overall grade, you know, it's, again, you know, the sum is greater than the parts type of thing, and it's an F. I could never, ever recommend this to anybody. I don't care how cheap you find this. I mean, even if somebody gave me this, I'd feel ripped off. You know, it's just...
That's the expression I've used on occasion, is that when free is too much, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. The only redeeming quality I could possibly think of for this book is if Marvel ever wanted to start back up doing those toilet paper comics that they did back in the 70s or the 80s. Where they were printing comics right on a roll of toilet paper, this would be perfect for that. But yeah, that's about it. Sorry, Herb Trimpe and Roy Thomas, but you know, I gotta call him like I see him, and this was just awful.
Yeah, sorry, Roy. You know, Roy and Herb, I am still a fan despite this book.
we did not really address the Hulk versus Thing aspect of this, though. What did we think of that? Because they honestly, other than I take it back. I was going to say other than the virtual fight in the beginning, they don't tussle again. But yeah, they do tussle when they're mocking. They have the mock fight until they figure out a way to defuse the Mole Man's force field. So what do we think as far as their actual fight? Like, are we prepared to declare a winner in the fight?
I'm going to declare this one very, very close, but I think throughout it, kind of the Hulk seems to maintain more control and seems to get in a decent number of fair shots. I think they both get in some decent shots, but I just feel like the Hulk was more in control of the battle each time, just because, I guess, you know, emphasizing the Bruce Banner's brain controlling the Hulk or whatever. So I kind of thought he had the edge.
Right.
So I'm giving the Hulk on this one.
I did like that the Hulk admitted that that blow, when he's jumping into the water and the Thing smashes him in the mouth, he says it, that he actually did dislocate one of his teeth. I actually kind of liked that. But, yeah.
Do you have a winner in your mind?
I mean, the Hulk in this, and that's more based on the beginning of the story more than anything, because to me it seemed like the thing, I felt like he gave up a little bit too easily. Like, everybody agreed that he lost, and so he, you know, so to his own mind he lost, and then he was going to go off and kind of sulk and pout about it. And even when they had their actual fight towards the end, I'm not sure at what point they realized that they were just kind of having a mock battle, but even that, I don't know, it didn't seem to have the same ferocity as the beginning of the story where they were fighting in the virtual arena and all that. So, yeah, I'm still going to give it to the Hulk during this era. But, I mean, the Hulk has the definite advantage because, you know, not only of his size and his strength and his melding, and he's got the brain of Banner in control and all that sort of thing, but also during this period, I would argue that the Thing is at a disadvantage with the whole, you know, the scarred face and all that. And this, the way he's presented in this, makes it look like he's got some sort of like nasty infection going on or something that might even be affecting him or something, because he's pretty messed up during this period.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but this I think, you know, of all the Thing Hulk issues we've done, this may be the low point.
Oh, I hope so.
I don't know what to expect going forward, because I do remember when we first started talking about doing this retrospective that I had read a bunch of them. I thought I read all of them. So maybe I did, maybe I didn't, and I don't know ultimately if I'm gonna think differently, you know, as we go past this one. I'm gonna say this one's even worse, or if it's gonna be, oh, thank God they brought it up a level. But I didn't remember this when I reread it, or when I read it for today. So I'm not sure. Maybe I didn't read all the ones I thought I did.
I'm not sure if I made it this far, to be honest with you. I think I might have only done up to a certain point, because I'm not sure how far we had decided to go.
Well, originally the plan was that we were going to just kind of give the history issue by issue with, you know, just a brief discussion of each one. And this was back when it was me, you, and Michael Bailey. And we were each picking one issue to spotlight, but otherwise we were just going to kind of give like a, you know, a two-minute discussion of each one going through. But yeah, I'm glad we decided to actually do the full run on it, but we could have done without this one.
I think everybody could do without this one.
But while the book stunk, I hope the listeners enjoyed the discussion of the book. But thank you, everybody, for listening, and
Now, the next one looks to me, unless, I don't know, I'd be curious the list that you have, because sometimes I think our lists vary from each other, but it kind of looks like the next one is Hulk 450. Is that what you're showing?
That's what I have. And then the one after that is Iron Man 12 from the Heroes Reborn.
Right.
So they're both kind of that Reborn universe, so I think we could do the two of them.
I kind of wonder if they continue one from one to the other. I don't know. I have not read.
Well, I don't think the Hulk was part of, you know, he wasn't, the actual Hulk book wasn't part of the Reborn universe. Although I think this issue is something with Doctor Strange trying to reach to his persona, because if you remember, there was a Hulk here, meaning the 616 universe.
Right.
But he was almost like mindless at this point because his mind was in the Reborn universe. Something along those lines. I don't remember how it went. But there's actually, we could actually do three if we want to get ambitious, because there's Hulk 450, Iron Man 12, and then Heroes Reborn The Return. So we could in one episode kind of cover all three and hit that whole era.
I wouldn't mind doing that.
I think that's a good way, because if they do stink, we'll get through them quick. Because then we get to do Rampaging Hulk number 5.
Which I think is a flashback tale.
Yes, it's back when he was fighting the original Avengers. Because remember the cover? It's got there, he's like in an ice block and they're carrying him away. And it's got like the old Iron Man costume.
No, that's not that one.
Oh, no?
I know it's one you're thinking of. No, it's not. That was Rampaging Hulk, but that was the magazine. No, the one that we were doing was Rampaging Hulk, the comic. So, no, it's not. But it is a flashback tale.
Yeah.
to the early days.
Okay.
At least I believe
makes,
it is.
No, you're right. I just clicked on it. That makes me sad. I don't see that issue of the Rampaging Hulk magazine on my list here, though. So,
No, it's not.
I need to add it to it, because we are going to have to cover that.
Yeah, but
that's no thing. There's no thing in that. No, we don't have to cover that. That was dumb of me. Why aren't you correcting me when I say something dumb? What's the matter with you? I rely on you to keep me from looking dumb by saying things that are dumber than me. And you really let me down there. Anyway.
I don't know. Art wise on some of these ones coming up, maybe this wasn't the worst one that we're gonna see. Some of the art on these ones coming up is pretty rough looking too, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, me I you may have something there. We're going to see. But anyway, thank you for listening to this. I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you think. And, you know, we're trying to give you guys some entertainment, so you can thank us by going on to whatever your podcatcher is and giving us a really good review. 5 stars. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.